Hey everyone, ready for a deep dive that might just turn your world upside down?
Ooh, sounds intriguing. I'm ready.
Okay, well, buckle up because we're tackling a question that's going to make us rethink how we understand, well, everything. Is science truly objective? Or is it more about us humans constructing our own reality?
That is a big question and a question that's been around for centuries.
Right. But we're taking a cue from Robert J. Martin's paper.
Oh, yeah, that one really digs into some complex ideas. Second-order cybernetics, radical constructivism, the biology of cognition.
I know, right? Some of those terms are a bit intimidating. But don't worry, we're going to unpack it all together.
We are. And we'll try and keep it from getting too jargony.
Definitely. So where should we start?
Well, Martin kicks things off by bringing up Xenophanes, this Greek philosopher from way back in the 6th century, BCE.
Okay, BCE. So we're talking ancient history here.
We are. But Xenophanes had some pretty radical ideas for his time. He said that even if someone were to stumble upon the complete and absolute truth, they wouldn't actually know it.
Whoa. That's kind of trippy. So even if there is some ultimate truth, it's like we're not equipped to actually grasp it fully.
Yeah, that's the kind of question Martin wants us to grapple with.
Makes you wonder if everything we think we know is just like our own made-up interpretation.
Right. And that's where he brings in this idea of second-order cybernetics to explore that further.
Okay, cybernetics. I think I've heard that term before, but I can't quite remember what it means.
Well, it's a bit complex, but think of it like this. It's the idea that the observer is always part of the system they're observing.
So we can't just pretend we're these neutral bystanders looking in on the world.
Exactly. We're always influencing things just by being there, like a parent watching their kid play.
Okay, yeah. The kid totally acts differently when they know a parent's watching.
Exactly. Their presence, their reactions, it all shapes how the kid behaves. It's like the parent is part of the system of play just by observing.
Okay, I'm starting to get it. So basically, there's no escaping our own perspective. Like, our background, beliefs, even our mood in that moment, it all colors how we see things.
Exactly. We bring all that baggage with us, so to speak.
Which means that maybe this whole idea of science uncovering a real world that exists independently of us, maybe that's not the whole picture.
Right. It's like, if our brains are constantly constructing our reality, then how can we claim any absolute truth?
So maybe science isn't about finding this objective reality,
right,
but more about us humans creating models and frameworks that help us navigate our experiences.
Exactly. And Martin's not alone in this thinking. He draws on a lot of other thinkers like Heinz von Forster and Ernst von Gleisersfeld.
Okay, I've heard of von Forster before. Wasn't he a big name in cybernetics?
He was. And these thinkers argue that our brains don't have this direct access to the world out there. They say our nervous systems operate like closed systems.
Wait, closed systems? Can you break that down for me? I'm not sure I follow.
Sure. Think of it like this. Your brain relies on your senses, right? Sight, sound, touch, all of that.
Yeah. Our senses are how we take in information about the world.
Right. But those senses, they're like limited windows. They only let in a fraction of what's actually out there.
Oh, okay. So it's like our senses are kind of filtering the information we receive.
Exactly. They're not giving us this full, unfiltered picture.
Wow. That makes you wonder what we're missing.
It does. And from this limited information, our brain constructs its understanding of the world. It creates this model, a simulation, you could say.
So everything we experience is just our brain's best guess at what's actually going on. It's like mind-blowing.
It is kind of mind-blowing. And it suggests that maybe there isn't just one true reality, but maybe multiple realities constructed by different observers.
Whoa, okay. You have so many questions about that.
I bet.
But before we go there, I want to go back to this idea of our brains as closed systems. Does that mean we're all trapped in our own little worlds, never truly able to connect with others who have different experiences?
It's a great question. And it leads us to another key point Martin brings up, this idea of disciplines as silos.
Disciplines as silos.
Yeah. He argues that the way we've organized knowledge into all these specialized fields, each with its own jargon and methods.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It can be like trying to read a foreign language sometimes.
Right. And Martin says that this can make it harder to see the bigger picture and really challenge our assumptions.
It's like instead of science being this big, unified pursuit of knowledge, it's become all fragmented.
Exactly, like all these separate camps that don't always talk to each other.
And I'll admit, sometimes even I get lost in the jargon when I'm reading something outside of my own area of expertise.
Oh, absolutely. It happens to all of us. And it's something Martin actually illustrates with a really interesting anecdote. It's about these researchers at von Forster's biological computer laboratory.
Okay, von Forster again. What happened there?
Well, these researchers, they were actually criticized for not understanding the philosophy of science, just because they dared to question this whole idea of separating the observer from the observation.
Wait, they were criticized for questioning a fundamental assumption? That seems so counterproductive, doesn't it? Shouldn't science be all about questioning those assumptions?
Do you think so? Right. But this story just highlights how deeply ingrained that idea of objectivity is in scientific culture.
It's almost like a built-in resistance to anything that might disrupt the status quo.
Exactly.
So if we know that these silos are a problem, how do we break out of them? How do we get people from different fields talking to each other, challenging each other's assumptions?
Well, Martin sees some hope in fields like art, music design. He thinks they're becoming more self-reflective.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but it makes sense. Those fields are all about exploring subjective experiences and different ways of perceiving the world.
Right. He gives the example of Robert Irwin, this visual artist. He stopped making physical art objects and started focusing on manipulating environments, light, space, shadows.
So it's not about the object itself, but how the viewer experiences the space.
Exactly.
You know, that reminds me of John Cage's famous musical piece, 443.
Oh, yeah.
It's the one where the music is actually all the sounds the audience hears in the silence.
Oh, right.
Like, Cage is forcing the audience to become aware of their own role as listeners, as part of the performance itself.
That's a great example. And it shows how some disciplines are really embracing this idea of the observer as an active participant in creating meaning.
So even in math, which we usually think of as so objective, there's this recognition that our understanding is shaped by our own unique perspective. That's fascinating.
It is.
But how do we apply this kind of thinking more broadly, especially in the sciences that are so focused on finding this objective truth?
That's a big question, and one we'll explore further in the next part of our deep dive. But one key takeaway is that embracing those limitations of our knowledge, recognizing we're all constructing our own realities, well, that might actually be a source of strength, not a weakness.
Okay. I'm definitely intrigued and ready to dive deeper into those implications. But for now, I think we should leave our listeners with something to chew on.
A little food for thought.
Exactly. So if our brains are constantly creating these models of the world, what responsibility do we have to be aware of those models and how they shape our actions? It's a question worth pondering. And we'll pick it up right here in part two of this deep dive. Welcome back, everyone. So we're picking up right where we left off, exploring this wild idea that maybe, just maybe, our understanding of the world isn't about uncovering some objective truth.
Right, but about our brains, like constantly constructing their own little models of reality.
And we were just getting into how this plays out in science, which, you know, prides itself on being objective. It's almost a paradox, isn't it?
It really is. Like, how can science, with its rigorous methods and all that, embrace this idea of reality being a construct?
It really challenges some pretty fundamental assumptions. Remember those researchers we were talking about at von Forster's lab?
The ones who got in trouble for questioning the neutral observer.
Yeah, exactly. Seems like there's a real tension there.
Absolutely. And Martin connects this tension to the way cybernetics has developed historically. Remember how we talked about second-order cybernetics, where the observer becomes part of the system?
Right. That was mind-blowing.
Well, before that, there was first-order cybernetics, which focused on, like, control systems, feedback loops, more of a mechanistic view.
Right, like a thermostat controlling the temperature.
Yeah.
Simple cause and effect.
Exactly. And first-order cybernetics fit in with that traditional scientific paradigm because it didn't challenge the objective observer. But then second-order cybernetics comes along and bam.
Like, hey, scientists can't pretend they're outside the experiment anymore. They're part of the equation.
Right. And that ruffled some feathers because it challenged those assumptions about objectivity.
You know, it makes me think about how we talk about scientific breakthroughs. But what if the biggest breakthroughs, the ones that really change things, are those ideas that make us the most uncomfortable?
That's a great point, because they force us to rethink our whole framework for understanding the world.
And to admit that maybe we don't have all the answers.
Exactly. It requires intellectual humility. being open to being wrong.
Which, let's be honest, is really hard, especially when we're often rewarded for being confident and having strong opinions.
It is. It means being okay with uncertainty, embracing ambiguity, and being open to changing our minds.
Okay, speaking of changing our minds, Martin also talks a lot about language, how it can both help and limit our understanding, like how disciplines develop their own jargon.
Oh, yeah. Useful within the field, but it creates barriers between disciplines.
It's almost like each discipline builds its own little world with its own language, and those worlds don't always communicate very well.
It's like that Tower of Babel story, right? Where everybody starts speaking different languages.
And then everything falls apart because they can't understand each other anymore.
Yeah.
Total recipe for disaster.
Exactly. And in science, that's how we get those silos of knowledge. Disciplines isolated from each other.
So instead of this beautiful web of interconnected knowledge where different fields are, like, building on each other, we have these fragments that don't fit together.
And Martin argues that this actually hinders scientific progress because it's harder to see the connections, the patterns that emerge when you look across disciplines.
And it's harder to challenge those assumptions we were talking about.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's say we agree that this fragmentation is a problem. What's the solution? How do we get rid of these silos and get people collaborating more?
Well, Martin's a big fan of what he calls transdisciplinary thinking. He talks about those MACI conferences as an example, bringing together people from all these different fields.
It's like cross-pollination for ideas.
Exactly. And it wasn't just about sharing information. It was about challenging assumptions, developing a shared language, finding those unexpected connections between fields that seem totally different.
That sounds amazing. But it also sounds like it takes a lot of humility, doesn't it? Being willing to admit you don't know everything. That someone from a totally different field might have something to teach you.
Absolutely. It means shifting from seeing knowledge as this static thing to seeing it as something that's dynamic, constantly evolving.
And something we create together.
Exactly.
Okay, but it's one thing to talk about breaking down silos. How do we actually put that into practice?
Well, I think it starts by acknowledging the limits of our own individual viewpoints. Being curious about what others have to offer, even if it challenges us.
That's easier said than done, though, right? I mean, we all have our biases.
You're right. It's hard work. It requires a conscious effort to be open-minded, to listen with empathy, to be willing to adjust our own perspectives.
You know, it strikes me that Martin himself is a great example of someone who embraces that interdisciplinary approach. His work spans so many different fields.
It's like he's always searching for those connections between different areas of knowledge, and that's what he's encouraging us to do too.
It's pretty inspiring, actually. Makes you realize we don't have to be limited by those disciplinary boundaries. We can be lifelong learners, constantly pushing our own boundaries.
And that's not just an intellectual exercise. It has real implications for how we interact with each other, how we make decisions.
So it's not just about the science, but also about ethics, right?
Exactly. Once you accept that reality is construction, it changes how we think about how we should act in the world.
Okay, yeah. So we've talked about the scientific implications of this constructed reality idea. But I'm really interested to delve into the ethical side of things.
Me too. And that's where things get really interesting because it brings up these big questions about responsibility, about empathy, about the very nature of truth. It's a lot to unpack, and it's something we'll explore in the final part of our deep dive.
Okay, so we've spent the last two parts of this deep dive really digging into this idea of constructed reality. How it challenges our ideas about objectivity, how it plays out across different fields.
Yeah, right.
But I think now we're getting to the really juicy stuff, the ethical implications.
It's where it gets real.
Because if we accept that there's not one single true reality, but rather, you know, multiple realities built by different people.
Yeah.
Well, that has to change how we approach the world, how we interact with each other.
It does. And that's something Martin really emphasizes, that this idea of constructed reality has, you know, big implications for how we treat each other, how we make decisions in a world where there aren't always easy answers.
So it's not just acknowledging that different people have different opinions. Mm-hmm. It's more like understanding that those perspectives are all, like, valid in their own right.
It is.
Because if everyone's reality is a construction, then no one has a monopoly on truth.
Exactly.
Because everyone's truth is based on their own experiences, their own way of knowing.
And that means we have to be really careful about, you know, imposing our own beliefs on others, especially when those beliefs are based on this idea that we're being objective or that we have some, you know, special access to the right way of seeing things.
Yeah, totally. It's like that saying, don't judge someone until you've walked a mile in their shoes.
Right.
Except in this case, it's more like, don't judge someone's perspective until you understand how their brain has, you know, constructed their reality.
Exactly. It's all about empathy, trying to understand the world from someone else's point of view, even if it seems totally different from our own.
And this seems especially important now, you know, with the way we consume information these days. It's so easy to get stuck in those echo chambers, surrounded by people who agree with us. How do we break out of that and actually engage with different perspectives?
It takes work, that's for sure. It's about being willing to step outside our comfort zone.
Right.
Talk to people who see things differently.
People who might challenge us.
Yeah. And to be open to, you know, maybe learning something that might change our minds.
So it's not just being aware of our own biases.
Mm-hmm.
It's about actively seeking out those alternative viewpoints,
mm-hmm.
even if they make us a little uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Because that's where this idea of constructed reality can be so powerful. It's not about saying there's no external world. It's about recognizing that how we perceive that world is always filtered through our own individual lens. And the more lenses we can look through,
right.
the more complex and nuanced our understanding becomes.
It's like we're shifting from seeing knowledge as something we acquire to something we create together.
Through dialogue, interaction.
Right. And it's about moving beyond those simple black and white categories like right or wrong, true or false.
Uh-huh.
And embracing the complexity of being human.
Yeah.
And embracing that complexity doesn't mean we can't have strong opinions or take action,
right?
Just means we do it with a little more awareness of our own limitations, with a little more respect for other people's views.
Exactly. And Martin talks about how recognizing the limits of our own knowledge can make us more humble, more compassionate, more open to engaging with people who think differently.
Oh, that reminds me of that Von Forster quote.
Yeah.
Truth is the invention of a liar.
Oh, yeah, that one.
It always throws me off a bit. But I get what he's saying.
Yeah.
He's challenging us to think about how our own truths might be used to, like, control other people or even harm them.
It's a good reminder.
So if we acknowledge that our truths are always going to be partial,
right?
Because they're based on our own unique experiences, maybe we can be more cautious about claiming we have all the answers. And that's where I think responsibility comes in. We have this responsibility to use what we know wisely, to think about the impact of our actions, and be open to honest conversation.
Even when it's hard.
Exactly. And, you know, it seems like acknowledging our limitations can actually make us more open-minded.
More willing to listen.
More able to find common ground.
Even when we disagree.
And that feels so hopeful.
It does.
Especially in a world that feels so divided sometimes.
It is. So if there was one thing you'd want our listeners to take away from this deep dive, what would it be?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I know.
But if I had to pick one thing, it would be to embrace the unknown. Don't be afraid to question your own assumptions. Challenge what you think you know.
Yeah.
And be open to new ways of seeing things. That's where real growth happens, both for ourselves and for, you know, society as a whole.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap up this deep dive into the world of constructed reality.
Until next time.
Keep those minds curious and those hearts open.